Hello and welcome to the second podcast edition of Corner of Hunter and George, where we examine different artists who come out of Peterborough, who at least have had some connection and played in Peterborough. And we just basically sit down and chat, and I try and learn things about them, and hopefully you do as well. And also what keeps, in a lot of ways, what keeps these artists going through these very challenging times of Corona and the post-industrial age of Peterborough. And with those things said, you definitely can relate that to the guest I have today. He's someone I've wanted to talk to a while, because ever since I've discovered his sound, since coming to Peterborough, I've been quite fascinated with him by both just his basic sound techniques and also his sort of diversity of sound, is different ways of going at things as an ambient artist, so sound engineer, drone artist, whatever we want to label him as. We're talking about BPH, or otherwise known as BP Hughes. I sat down with him and I didn't even come close to talking about everything I wanted to. I could have sat down and talked with this man for another hour, and I hope this is not the last time we talk, but you will get to hear it now, my discussion with BPH or BP Hughes on this edition of Corner of Hunter and George. Enjoy.
Okay. Good evening.
How are we doing?
Oh, pretty good.
Okay. I'm on an old crappy lappy, so it hasn't had the camera actually active probably in about 3 years.
Okay, that's all right. That's right.
Camera's I don't know if the audio is coming through or if...
Yeah, it is.
At one point, I had to actually set the audio separate of the camera input, mm-hmm. mic. So hopefully you're getting a good signal.
No, I am. I am.
Okay,
cool. Yeah. So, my name's Tim. I do this podcast. I just started kind of just once in a while, just trying to mainly cover different artists in Peterborough, although yep. admittedly my first episode was with someone who does not live in Peterborough.
But no, Claire's pretty cool though.
Yes she is.
So
she is, and
I've been here like about three or four times, I think now. So
I think so, yes. And I also, yeah, I sometimes insert this on the show I do at Trent Radio, which is Saturdays at 8, so I might do that this time as well, either this Saturday or this upcoming Saturday or the Saturday after. So, yeah, I guess I was asking you because I just came across you when I moved to Peterborough, which has just been in the last couple of years, and I just found that I've just was sort of taken away by basically all of, albums you've done, and also preparing for this, I discovered some more things. But I guess it seemed to be, from what I was getting in some research, that you've been around a while. So I guess I've just got to start with the one question: how long have you been producing sounds and sort of evolving as a artist, or however you want to call yourself?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. How did we do this? We didn't really, I did Trent Radio well before I ever actually probably recorded anything. And one of my friends, good friends, almost lifetime friend at this point, they were starting their business. And sometime around when him and I were doing some sound production, at a now defunct venue in town, there was a night of drinking cider and eating pizza late, and we just started messing about with some gear and started recording some stuff. So that's maybe early mid 90s.
Oh wow. Really?
It's like when we did some of that. I haven't actually really done too much myself. Well, I guess I was doing a lot of intermixed with the second or third summer that I did Tramp Radio, because I started Tramp Radio while I was in high school. So it was probably about the second or third summer is when we discovered, because the logger tape was actually a two-track stereo, like a stereo logger tape, reel to reel in Studio A. And it had a speaker on it. So you could crank it up. And we found that if we put the third mic over by it, we could create a feedback loop. So we started I started messing about with playing, you know, I'd have a sound effects record on one of the turntables, a techno record on one of the other ones, a tape loop happening, and the feedback loop. And I think some of it started then, but we didn't really record any of that stuff ever. It was just kind of like screwing around and learning how to do sound collages and mixes and that kind of stuff. And then we started doing the live sound, and it wasn't until, I guess, my friend via his business, he would get not for resale copies of some audio software. So I played with early versions of all kinds of things. I think I started creating the just weird electronic stuff more directly than myself. So that was when things would have been like, you know, Pentium 4 with, you know,
right. Yeah.
Maybe 4 megs of RAM or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was a decked out machine. You know, with a Sound Blaster 16, you know, a 16-bit sound card.
Yes, that.
So them were the days.
Though, yes, that's hard for anyone, I don't know, anyone under 30 to relate to, but yes.
Yeah, well, yeah, especially with the 32-bit floating kind of standard that's kind of taking over right now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's already taken over, but us amateurs are still doing 16-bit or 24-bit, depending on how much hard drive or hardware latency we have, I guess.
Right, right. So I've noticed you kind of describe, or it says on Bandcamp anyway, that you're kind of described as a drone artist. So is there anyone you sort of respect or did respect in that field that sort of led you to pursue it, sort of?
I feel like it's a lot of the time it's been after the fact that mm-hmm. I've realized where connections did lie. I was very, like the summer that we started Tramp Radio, well, my friend and I, while we were in high school, we were just discovering the 4ID and Beggar's Banquet labels out of the UK.
Right, yeah.
So you've got early Cocteau Twins, you've got Dead Can Dance, some stuff like that. There was also, of course, some electronic stuff that was happening adjacent to that that we are also kind of paying attention to. So then we were finding not next generation stuff, but like then what slowly was happening later on over here with, you know,
right.
Things like Network Records starting up some stuff and some other smaller Canadian labels, or I guess a lot of them were, I guess that they weren't labels per se. They were more collectives that turned into labels as things happened. So,
yeah.
And following some of that, I think a lot of it goes back to that kind of end of things. And plus we were also kind of goth industrial kids. So it was, you bring in the electronic side of things there too. And some of the, I guess more noisy stuff that wasn't really noise, but it was weird experimental stuff at the time. If you throw in Throbbing Gristle and Psychic TV and those kind of things at those points. And,
right.
Yes. And Chris and Cozy, Cabaret Voltaire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those kind of things. You know, there as much as some of that's, you know, just messing about with electronics, and there's still some dub and dance stuff in there, I guess.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is sort of, yeah, experimentation, but that's one of those sort of fascinating things about goth too. Like it has kind of a noise element or an electronic element that like can you can really sort of, I don't know, add a lot of kind of richness to it, to what maybe it once was.
Yeah, it was interesting. The evolution has been interesting for sure.
Yeah. But I also, I guess I've noticed when I've been listening to your various recordings that it kind of goes in these different directions, like what you did in 2017, like Sounds Between the Silence of an Electric City at Night. I you tell me if I've got this wrong, but it's sort of meant to be sort of kind of like a sound photograph of sort of like Peterborough, how the title describes, kind of like a field recording kind of exercise.
Yeah, that one's really interesting because that was a Trent Radio RPM challenge thing. Mm-hmm. I'd already done one.
Right.
And finished it, submitted it fairly, like with a couple weeks left, I guess. I had all this folder full of sounds that I'd done a couple of walks the previous October. I take the same route when I go out downtown, or I was at the time. I can't remember why I first decided to take the recorder with me, but I did the one time and I captured a bunch of stuff. And I think most of it's from the same night. I think some of the geese and ducks down by Silverbean might be two different nights, but I couldn't tell you unless I went back and reviewed the stuff.
Right.
But I don't know. Somebody said something to me. And I was like, I felt like I was challenged to put it because I had enough time that I could put together something else for the RPM challenge that would be not what everybody expected. And I did that as a, I think my volume was really low though for some reason. And I think I had to get, I sent it to Matt Jarvis because I had, there must've been a couple of weeks left. So I sent it to Matt Jarvis at, well, he was still at Trent Radio. And I said, hey, Matt, I've got this extra thing, but can you pull some audio magic and bump up the levels? And if so, I'll make it another submission. And I was really happy with it. But again, it was like the recording volume was just low. And I don't know what happened there. I don't know if it was my machine or if it was just, you know. And of course, my working copy had been deleted because I was running out of space. So I just had what I'd saved. So he worked from what I was going to submit, and he was able to bump it up a little bit, and I was actually quite happy with it in the end.
Yeah, well, it is quite interesting to listen to, and I do find though there's kind of like there's definitely a lot more kind of like I don't know like what you just said about this album was like a night out, you went out walking, but when you do Ritual 13, like even quoting what you said there, which had me quite interested, like an excerpt from the audio documentation of a layperson's exploration and experimentation with summering and ritual magics in a post-industrial landscape. That kind of really, kind of hit me that you're kind of sort of Peterborough in more of a kind of, I don't know if I should say dystopian frame, but a little more of a, like, I guess, It does sound actually kind of, that album sounds like almost, I'd say, kind of eerie, but maybe before I get into that, I guess I'll just say, like, since you refer to magic in that, like, does sound capture something of magic, or like, well, I guess I'll start here. What is magic to you in your, like, your own definition?
I was going to say, my answer to what you initially said was going to be yes, but it's, yeah. I see kind of sound and music as a reflection. So I feel like noise is like the urban equivalent of folk music to a degree. I guess I'm more thinking like Appalachian and, you know, some southern kind of chunks of, or southwestern chunks of it, in the sense that it came about organically because of the environment that the people were in, right? And in this case, at a certain point, when you're in urban sprawl, or we're close enough to Toronto that, you know, we can take short trips to urban sprawl. Mm-hmm. That it's really easy to kind of keep the mindset and actually start to see the gentrification actually starting to happen around you.
Well, yeah,
There's some stuff in there where I just feel like when you start to see the things decaying, you've got to wonder what history or what kept it happening beforehand. So that there's magic in, you know, the history and the community and that, you know, either we're using spaces or gathered in spaces or celebrated around, you know, events that happened around things.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it ties more to community.
Right.
As much as it does space, because you can't have one without the other to a degree.
Well, you certainly see that a bit now, like even more so than probably it was in 2018, this sort of, not that I'm advocating for it, but kind of this clumsy attempt at our municipal government and other forces of creating some kind of gentrification. But there is still, knowing from personal experience, there's still quite a lot of abandoned space in our downtown. So
yeah,
even maybe more so now after like a couple years of COVID. But we're kind of at that spot where we're wondering where we're going or what we're making of our past or where we're heading in our future. I don't know if you have anything to comment on that particularly on the municipal level.
I don't know. I've been removed from some things for a little bit while, like a year sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a health issue. So I was kind of, I sidelined myself to kind of try to focus more on that.
Mm.
And I felt like I was already seeing it, but like, I guess from about 17 onwards, there's just, we've lost spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like bars and restaurants, but some community spaces, some community organizations. The venues did hurt. There's just some changes happening, and it's all kind of culminated in, you know, it furthering and worsening through the pandemic, I guess.
Yes.
I'm not sure how it comes out on the other side for artists in any form, but the thing that, because of the health issue I'm dealing with, or have been dealing with, had been,
mm-hmm.
I depends where we're at with it, I guess. I guess that depends how I wake up. I have no way of participating right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only so much participation that we can do. Mm-hmm. Based on, you know, as things were slowly opening, and now we're at a point where more is open, but there's still some changes. There was an event at Sadler House last Saturday.
Okay. Yeah.
That was last Saturday. Or was it the Saturday before? Now, wow, that was just before Halloween. Like, it was Halloween.
The 30th. Day. Yeah. So
yeah,
a little over a week ago. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the first time I'd been out to anything in a while. The event was orchestrated and arranged in a way that they were going to be more than stringent with the guidelines that were available before the guidelines opened up further. They didn't actually change anything in the event. They unfolded it the same way that they were going to, which was way lower than the capacity that they could have had. Right. Lots of room, it worked.
Okay, good.
And so the overall vibe was basically, it was everybody's chance to kind of do like a slow opening or like, you know, put their foot in the water, the audience and the artists together, you know. Like, okay, you to find your comfort level so that things can move forward. And I think if that continues to happen with some of the groups and some of the spaces, then that'll be great. And if there's a few other spaces in town that are fully open and doing whatever they can because they need to put money in their pocket to pay their rent, which I understand. But, you know, I am guessing that you'd be hard pressed to find they are stringently following suggested regulations. And are probably covering whatever they need to do that, you know, the local health unit in their checks are, you know, checking for. So, but it's, and I think that'll be the way it is until maybe the weather changes again in the spring. And by then, if regulations and some restrictions are further removed and we're a little bit further ahead, maybe the whole thing will open up. And I think maybe some of the artists will open up again. There's been this chunk of time where artists haven't had any time to actually have any experiences that they normally do.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, artists have produced less. Even though they've had more time to reflect, they need to be doing things as well as reflecting to produce, right? So it's there's only been one side of it, or participate in community, or there's been less reason for, like, we run Drone Day every year locally, and in 20, it was about the end of March in 2020, I think, is when I put out the first feeler saying, hey, we are going to do Drone Day. It'll be a broadcast on Trent Radio. You know, people send submissions in. And I don't think initially when I put out the first bunch of kind of feelers, put a time limit on anything, because we usually do kind of 30-minute sets with kind of a crossover between two artists, as you know, throughout the day. And, you know, usually we go for about 10 or 12 hours when we've done it live. So I was hoping that everybody would, you know, aim for about half an hour.
Right.
I got some that were 45, I got some that were 15, and I was like, okay, cool, this is great. And, you know, then I kind of melded it down to the more that, you know, half an hour works, but whatever anybody throws at me.
Right.
I had way more material than I thought I would have a couple weeks before I started actually curating the day with the material that I had. I think when I talked with Rob at Trent Radio there, we still hadn't set a length of that the broadcast was going to be. And I think I thought I was going to have 10 to 11 hours at that point. And I think I had 9 in a bit is by the time I actually got through curating it all. And I didn't have to really add much. For this past May when we did it, and I put out the feelers as early as I did in 2020, I was barely, people that gave me 45 minutes the year before were barely giving me 13. The pandemic really hit people's creativity and output overall. And because we had so much success and it was so easy to put 11 hours of programming together, we said we'd do 12. It took me a lot of time to scrape that 12 hours together.
Yeah.
Because I think from the submissions, the direct submissions, I might've got eight and a half, maybe at tops 9 hours.
Oh, okay.
And that's with me stretching and some material that got submitted to me late from the year before, you know, that people just didn't finish or something like that, or a couple collaborations that kind of, you know, they weren't really sure they wanted to share and that kind of thing. But we did make it happen. But like the pandemic has definitely impacted the community. It's impacted artists. It's impacted the community, and it's tough.
Right.
There's very little way to participate right now other than trying to keep things going that were happening, maybe in a new way, which a lot of people did adapt to online things, or trying to do online things. But I've heard from a lot of people that sitting in a box, whether it was a white box or a black box, with yourself or even a couple of other people spaced at a distance with microphones, was no way the same as sitting in front of you know, even 3 to 5 people in the same kind of size room during a regular show kind of setting or environment. It's that audience. It's not necessarily, I don't know if the audience you reflect more off the audience or what happens. There's a connection that you, when I do my noise stuff specifically, I will do certain things depending on how the audience is being. I can make changes where I want to go. I've got like a small map of things that I might want to be doing or try. So I think that other artists can also feel that. And, you know, they need the audience there for some feedback. Or that feedback definitely does help. It in a lot of cases, it sounds like it helps people's performance overall. Whether the audience is silent or, you know, 100%, like, you know, revving to go, engaged. Just knowing that they're there and being able to get that feedback it has been really important. And I think it's been missed.
Yes. Probably like also sort of a sense of feedback and probably any like emotional connection that you're not going to get out of, like, just not to go too far off the plank, but like yesterday I was at first time in a while, been to a Raptors game with my son, and you probably see things better on the TV, but like there's one play where the Raptors player stole the ball right out of Kevin Durant's hands and went all the way down to the other end and dunked it. And the people were on there like standing up and applauding and cheering and that kind of thing. And you just don't really quite get that if you're watching on TV.
Yeah, no, so, I understand that feeling. I've been to concerts where, you definitely would not have got the same vibe if you were watching it pre-recorded or even with a lot of live audience, seeing a live audience react to it. It's not the same level of energy.
Right.
You don't experience the same. You can imply it sometimes, but it's definitely not the same.
So just, I've noticed yourself personally. So you're talking about like sort of a lack of input from our artistic community the last few years, because you haven't had many venues to do this or many forms to do this in. But what I'm seeing, that's probably been the case for you yourself. I don't know if that's also because like what you're referring to, your health, or you've been busy organizing or things like that.
I think the last show that we organized was probably a small one at Dreams and Beans. And or there might have been one at John Hall's space around the corner there. Because we did a noise show. I know that we did kind of two shows that were smaller shows that were, one was a more experimental electronics one and one was like a noise. There was a couple noise cats coming through from the States. And they were doing Toronto and Montreal and Ottawa. And through a friend, we were able to do something on the Sunday. And so I think those were the last two that we did. But we put together two other Music Peterborough compilations previous, and like a couple years ago now.
Yes,
and I did technically start looking for submissions for the third one the end of 19, I think, the middle to end of 19, maybe that's a, we'll say the fall of 19. Mm-hmm. The idea was that I'd hoped to have it out or kind of together even as a digital thing at the end of 20, even if it wasn't going to be a physical thing, because the idea was that it'd be three cassettes. Then we move on to something else.
Okay.
This third one, in the end, I have probably close to 25 or 30 submissions. They're all of immensely varying quality, and variety. There is more and less at the same time diversity in some of the artists, which is always a struggle locally. Yeah, I think between health and the pandemic and just not really knowing if there was a reason or how to distribute something like that after the fact, since we were doing short runs, we did 100 each of the times that we did things. We've still got some of the second one. And I was trying to decide, we were trying to decide if it was going to be a longer thing because there was more submissions. Do we actually put them all out and make it like a bigger kind of package or release, which means it's going to cost more, or do we do less and include the more and like make it more limited? Because the idea behind these were that basically we would pre-sell some of them, and then the artists were getting a split of the product, so that it was originally, the idea was kind of so that a few of the local artists, the younger kids that didn't have releases yet but had some recordings done, would actually have something physical to sell when they went to their first show in Toronto or Ottawa or wherever. But at the same time, they were also taking a piece of Peterborough's music community with them, so that other people would realize that, you know, there is something more than maybe just this band happening in Peterborough. Yeah, it's tough to, when you all of a sudden have 25 submissions, it's harder to do 75 pieces of product and then split it to everybody so everybody gets more than a couple pieces, right? And make it, and so it's like, you've got to wonder what's worthwhile, and you've also got to cover your own costs, right? Because we're doing it out of pocket. It's one of those things where you're just kind of like, okay, like, I think those things, and with the pandemic, it just, it's, I don't know if I, and my health, I don't know if it was all just put on hold, or if it just, it slowly ground to something that it's all sitting there on a hard drive. And I think it's waiting for the right time.
Okay.
But it, that remains to be seen, I guess, at this point. Okay.
Well,
I guess it'll depend on my next health update.
Okay. Well, I hope that goes well, because I do, like I said, I've just, I find more I've listened to you, the more I'm kind of fascinated by it. And this is my fault. I've got to buy a membership to, or buy into Zoom eventually, so there's no time limitation, but unfortunately we're coming up on ours. But I have time for just another one here. You did this recording, so this, I think this is one of the things you're referring to, this compilation in 2020, Another Long Winter.
That was actually a separate thing that Alex Unger and Wes Griss and myself did.
Right.
It was like, I think I did my track. It was like the first snow of of November 19. And it was this, between the snow removal and me going out walking that night, there was some sound stuck in my head, and I did this long droney piece that was kind of a manipulation of a couple sounds mixed together, and both the lads really liked it. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I had some blank cassettes that we'd acquired through accident or happenstance. And I was like, well, maybe we should do a short run of cassettes. And I was like, and then my piece was almost 30 minutes, I think, or 20 something. And I asked the guys.
26, I think.
And I asked the guys for something that were probably half that, because I think they were 60 minute tapes. Mm-hmm. So I was like, aim for about 15 or under 15. And they both submitted something, and they're great pieces.
Right.
They're two of my favorite local people. So it's that was also a very, I don't know, I want to say lovely thing, but it's it's this weird warm moment in my heart from before the pandemic. Even though it was this idea of kind of coming winter, hard winter, and, you know, thaw or exodus of winter to a degree. And yeah, it just all worked.
Right. And should I take from that do you hate winter?
No, I was never a hockey player, but I was a downhill skier. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of hard to hate, you know, to, especially on those cold, windy, icy days.
Right.
That was sometimes those were, you know, some really good ski days. Okay. I don't know. It just felt right. It fit, if that makes, you know,
That makes total sense. Well, I thank you very much for this. I really honestly could have made this a lot longer, but I just, there's a lot more things to continue, but.
One of the things that, depending on what your plans are exactly for continuing to do this via your radio show or your podcast.
Yeah.
Besides the people that are on the, of the two compilations that are up, more of those people are active and still in the community than from the first one, because that one was so long ago. But there's a chunk of people on there that are worth talking to, as well as some other individuals that have, like myself, been facilitators or curators for shows and or spaces. Something like this would probably be I don't want to say a good reason for them to like involve themselves again, but it would be probably part of a good thing of just, you know, the whole kind of thing restarting, the community restarting as, you know, restrictions and stuff are happening. Because there's a lot of people that still haven't played shows or been out to shows at all since things have started to slowly open back up, and they need reasons to.
Okay.
With less venues, there's reasons, you know, there's reasons to drive things home a little harder too. So, I might send you an email on, and give you some names.
Okay.
Some contact information.
Okay, great. And, I'll probably send you a copy of what I've done here once I'm able to put it together in the next few days.
Yeah, but top it up as much as you need to.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think too much, but all right. Well, thank you very much for this. I honestly mean this when I say it. I hope we get to talk to again to each other in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We're trying to figure out if we're going to do a show in in the new year. And if it is, it'll probably be January or February. It'll be the one of the first 2 months of the first quarter. So
okay, great. But, I'll look out for that.
We'll see.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for your time, man.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Cheers.
I'm gonna play what we touched upon there, recording you did with two other artists back in February of 2020 called December. We did it with Grist Unger and Hughes. It's a trio. Those are two, Grist and Unger themselves are artists I should be looking into having, I think. I think those are two you're suggesting, W. Grist and Alex Unger. But B.P. Hughes did a 26-minute long track on there called Another Long Winter, and I'll play you a lot of that right now. gives you an idea of what his music is like on that track. That is just one photograph of him. I could have played that a lot longer, but he's a fascinating artist. And really, as I was suggesting throughout the interview, and I've been suggesting in that show, I've just began to chisel him out. Someone who admittedly is not that well known outside of Peterborough, and I find him to be a fascinating person to talk to, and I hope we see more of him in the future. Anyway, I hope you can join me next time on Corner of Hunter and George, whenever that comes out. I hope we've got at least one more before the end of 2021, and I'll see you then.